Hello and welcome to the Travel Diaries podcast. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Holly Rubenstein. I'm a journalist and editor. And here each week, I'll be speaking to a very special guest about their adventures around the world and the travel experiences and destinations that have shaped their lives. Today, I'm joined by Rachel Koo. Rachel is a cook, writer, and TV presenter who first rose to fame with her best-selling cookbook, The Little Paris Kitchen, a collection of recipes tested from her little Paris kitchen. The book was soon developed into her first TV series, and Rachel quickly became known by food lovers the world over with several cookbooks and TV series that followed. Now she lives in Stockholm with her Swedish husband and two children. And it's this new beginning that served as the inspiration for her latest project, The Little Swedish Kitchen. Rachel has lived a truly international life and her travel diaries really reflect that. So I hope you enjoy it. Let's hear now from Rachel Koo. I'm with the wonderful Rachel Koo in her glorious house. Welcome to the Travel Diaries. Thank you so much for being here. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
We're going to go on a journey through the 8 chapters of your life's travel diaries. And I feel like chapter 1, your earliest childhood travel memory, is going to be really good context for what's to come, because I feel like your childhood and your upbringing was really international.
Yeah, it certainly was, because my dad's from Malaysia. Mm-hmm. My mum's from Austria. I was born in the UK. So one of them was a primary school age, going camping in Cornwall in a caravan. Mm-hmm. And then my first trip to Malaysia when I was also similar age, 7 or 8. And I remember we went at Christmas. It was very hot and humid. And my relatives roasted a whole suckling pig on, you know, when they turn it. So it was on the whole,
on a spit roast.
On a spit roast. So I remember that. And also eating crab with lots of white bread. Sorry, this is all food memories.
So they're food memories. That's so interesting. So is that what's most evocative from your childhood?
Yeah. And then going to Austria as a kid, my relatives in Austria, my grandma cooking in her kitchen.
So where in Austria was that?
On the Swiss border, so mm-hmm. in Vorarlberg, so the opposite side of Vienna, in the mountains. I would spend summers up in the mountains with the cows. Oh. So it was very hidey, milking cows in the morning and just fresh and pure air. So I have like very varied
Yeah, they're quite contrasting locations that you traveled to. Did you go quite regularly to both?
So Malaysia wasn't very regular. Mm-hmm. I think I went once or twice as a young kid. Mm-hmm. Austria was like at least 2 or 3 times a year, if not more. It was great in the summer and also great in the winter. You know, it's a fabulous place to go all year round.
And how did your parents' respective cultures kind of influence your upbringing in England?
So I grew up, now I'm giving away my age. Well, you can see it on Wikipedia. But anyway, I grew up in the 80s. And back then, to put it into context, you would have to go to the chemist to get olive oil. That was like pre, like anything vaguely international at the supermarket. So my mum, you know, cooked really varied food, and I was always craving like chicken nuggets and chips my best friend would have for her dinner. So it was very multicultural, which mm-hmm. was not very common at that time, but people were a lot more home or UK focused. It has formed who I am.
Yeah.
And I think because so in my teen years, I lived in Germany. And living in another country when you're young really pushes yourself in terms of understanding another culture, but also you're not in your comfort zone. So I went to a German school, a German convent school. I didn't speak German. I had to put myself in a situation where everything was particularly hard and also very foreign, you know, not comfortable at the beginning. And then afterwards, you become like at ease with yourself for putting yourself in a situation where it doesn't all have to be familiar. There's nothing to lose. So I always feel very much, I go knock on that door. That's not a problem. I can go, I'll just go try things out. It's the way I ended up in doing what I am doing now is because I just knocked on doors. And I was like, hi, my name's Rachel, blah, blah, blah. I do this and that. Are you interested? I still do the same thing. You know, I still ring people, email people, get in touch with people. And I'm very much, let's just go for it. Because all I have to lose is, well, maybe a bit of dignity, but there's only more to gain from putting yourself out there.
So chapter two then is the first place that you fell in love with. What would that be?
I would have to say it would be Austria.
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, obviously I have a very personal connection to the country, but I spend so much of my childhood there. It's like a second home.
Mm-hmm.
So it would have to be Austria.
And if someone had never been to Austria, where would you point them to first?
Okay, so my mum comes from a very small county called Vorarlberg, which is on the Swiss border. Probably the most well-known place is Lech, which you can know for the skiing there.
Yeah.
But I would say go in the summer. Because you can go hiking, you go mountain biking. If you're feeling a bit lazy, you can get an e-mountain bike, which makes it super easy to get up the mountain. You go hiking, then you go, like, if you're really brave, you go for a swim in the icy cold waters, you know, the springs coming down from the mountains. Then they have these lovely like huts up in the mountains where you can go have some food, like a nice cold beer or fresh buttermilk, and all the like regional kind of very simple cuisine, very mm-hmm. simple farmer's food. And it's very fresh. It's kind of takes you away from the hustle and bustle. You know, if you're one to like, you just want to, you want the Mediterranean hot weather by the beach, you can kind of get that. A little bit, you could go to some of the lakes and you can just sun by the lake. Mm-hmm. You know, Lake Constance is beautiful. It borders Switzerland, Germany, and there's Liechtenstein. So what's great about this region in Austria is it's so close to other places. So you could drive an hour mm-hmm. or even half an hour, you're in Switzerland, half an hour you're in Germany, an hour you're in Italy. So it's a great base to have.
Yeah, you can cover a lot of ground from there. So we first fell in love with you when you were on our TV screens, your first TV series, The Little Paris Kitchen. Now, the journey to get there, I don't know whether everybody would know quite how much you put yourself on the line just suddenly moving to Paris. Can you tell me a little bit about the journey?
Yeah, so
you were so brave. I mean, I just think it shows so much gumption, right?
Well, or crazy. So I was working in fashion PR marketing in London, uh-huh. and it wasn't really my thing. And I always wanted to get back to food. And while I was at art college, I actually assisted on some food shoots.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to be a food stylist, but you needed to work for free. And I couldn't afford to work for free and work my way up. So I got a job in fashion PR marketing. And then after a while, I was like, you know what? I want to get back into food. And I met a few food stylists and they recommended you need to get more hands-on food experience, either go work in a restaurant or go to culinary school.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked at culinary schools. There was London, there was Vienna, and then there was Paris. And I was like, oh, Paris. I didn't really like Paris, but I thought if I go to Paris, not only can I learn how to bake, but I could also learn another language. Means if it didn't work out with the baking, I would come back with three languages. So English, German and French.
Yeah.
I could.
Which is amazing.
You know, I could get, it would be easier to get another job, like if I wanted to work in the city as a secretary, you know. So I was thinking that's my backup plan. I spent a year like saving up money. So I had my day job, but then I also looked after kids. I made birthday cakes for kid parties. And then when I had enough money, I looked at the courses. I put my deposit down. I got a job as an au pair in Paris. And then I got on the Eurostar. I had a big suitcase, a yoga mat. If anybody's caught the French or the Parisian metro before, they'll know it is extremely, it's not accessible for wheelchairs. It's very hard if you're rolling anything. You've got to go up and down a lot of stairs.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine, I'm quite short. I've got this huge suitcase and a yoga mat. I'm trying to lug it up and down these stairs. I was so sweaty by the time I arrived. It was awful.
And then what was the journey to you suddenly being on a BBC series from Paris?
A lot of blood, sweat and tears.
Yeah.
My big break came when I got a job selling cookbooks. So in that cookbook shop, I met other cookbook writers. And I was like, hi, my name's Rachel. Do you ever need, if you ever need some help, here are my details. And I started developing or testing recipes for another food writer. And this food writer, his editor saw what I was doing, said, do you want to write some cookbooks? So I wrote two cookbooks in French. And then after those two cookbooks, I thought, I want to write something in English. And that's where I put my idea together for the Little Paris Kitchen cookbook. And at the same time, I was like hosting cookery classes. I was doing pop-up restaurants. Now, just so that was like 2008, 2009. So doing pop-up restaurants.
You were ahead of the curve.
Yeah, hello. Yeah. So way ahead of the curve. And I was consulting back then. I was doing anything food related.
And you were having was it just two guests in your little Paris kitchen?
Yes. So basically, when I started writing the cookbook, I didn't want to waste the food.
I see.
So when you test recipes, there's a lot of food waste.
Yeah.
And also I wanted...
So you're looking after the environment, probably ahead of the curve as well.
Well, I've always been somebody not to want to waste food. It's like my mum and my grandmother very... much like you don't waste food. It's like you eat leftovers. So I was like, okay, who can I test recipes on? All my friends are at work during the day. Right. How about I'll put out a Facebook page. This was pre-Instagram. So it was Facebook, my newsletter and my blog. Mm-hmm. So I would release dates every month saying, these are the days I'm doing lunches. If you want to come, email me. And I got a waiting list. It was pretty impressive. I even had a review in the New York Times.
In the New York Times?
Yeah.
Wow.
So
that must have been so exciting.
It was really cool. And so I was writing the cookbook, developing recipes, meeting people from around the world who were coming to have lunch. And I really loved that experience of sharing a meal.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I'd get these emails from these Americans saying, yeah, we're coming on our honeymoon. We'd love to have lunch. And I'm like, sure, just so you know, it's small. So it's not, it's kind of intimate in the wrong way. You're looking for a romantic meal. It might be a bit strange. I'm going to be like sitting in your lap because I actually join people for lunch. So it would be two people and I'd sit and we'd chat and it was like me hosting someone. Mm. So not like me in the kitchen. Plus the kitchen, you could see me in the kitchen. If I ever dropped anything on the floor, there was no chance of picking it up again.
Yeah, they're hiding it.
Yeah.
Oh, it sounds wonderful. I wish that I could have attended.
Well, those days are gone.
Yeah.
Where, like, the landlady wanted her flat back.
Yeah. So there's probably quite a lot of traffic going in and out of there. So living in Paris for, was it 8 years? You must have some real insider tips for recommendations. What would you recommend for people visiting the city?
One thing I would recommend, which is accessible to everyone, is go to a food market. There's a food market on every day of the week apart from Monday. And usually each neighborhood will have one once or twice a week. If you're not sure which one's on, usually you can find it online. Or there's also always in the 14th arrondissement, Marché de Lique, which is Tuesday to Sunday. Saturday, Sunday, it's the biggest market. They have an antique-like part.
Great.
And pick up a baguette. Pick up some lovely fruit, pick up some cheese, some ham, go to a park, go to the canal and have a picnic.
Sounds wonderful. So chapter 3 is the place where you learnt the most about yourself. What would that be?
Ooh. Oh, God, I don't know. That's a hard one. So one place I've been to quite a lot now is Australia. My first trip to Australia was Sydney. And at that time, I had a friend who was living there and I said, okay, I want to come visit, but can we do a pop-up restaurant? And she's also a food writer, Frankie Unsworth. And she was living there and she said, okay, well, how about we do it in my flat? So we decided to do a pop-up restaurant quite a while ago now. And we decided to do a restaurant in her living room. We got great press, actually. We got an article in the Sydney Morning Herald, and we decided to do a theme about, it was called Edible Tales, and the theme was immigration. And it was like the tale of people coming to Australia.
Oh, that's
and
great.
How they discovered the indigenous ingredients. And I just remember one evening, there was such a buzz around the table of everybody sharing their story of how they came to Australia. It was just so magical. It wasn't just the food, it was that human connection.
Yeah.
And for me, that is what really brings me joy with food, is that connecting people to each other or having that moment of sharing something. It's not just eating, the energy consumption or that, you know, flavor, or it's that taking time and connecting with someone, which happens less and less, I feel, in the real world. A lot of people connect online, but that human connection is so vital. And people left that event and they were like, oh, let's meet up next week, da 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 da. And that was really special.
That does sound really special. And also in terms of learning about yourself, I mean, we're in your London HQ. But a few years ago you moved to Stockholm, right? Yeah. Hence the Little Swedish Kitchen, fabulous TV series, gorgeous book. But I think what really amazes me about that is that I think a lot of us kind of fantasize about moving to a different city and experiencing a new way of life, but don't have the guts to actually go through and do it. And you did it not just with Sweden, but with Paris. And, you know, how has it been uprooting your life and moving to Scandinavia?
Look, it's not easy. I mean, it's easier in the sense that in Sweden, the level of English is so high.
Yeah.
So you don't have that language barrier.
Yeah.
Like I did in France or when I lived in Germany as a teen. So in that sense, it's easier. But in another sense, it's difficult because I work from home. I don't work in an office. So meeting people, I would literally follow people on Instagram. And because they're in Stockholm, I'd send them a message saying, hi, my name's Rachel. I'm new to Stockholm. Do you fancy meeting a coffee?
Really?
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah, so I actually...
So, like, it is hard to meet new friends and stuff, wherever you go.
It's like dating. You've got to, like, you meet somebody first time and it's like a one-night stand. So how can you convert that one-night stand into a long-term relationship? Yeah. Like, when you're adult, like, making friends, it's not like as a kid, like, oh, come, let's play together, blah, blah, blah. You
totally.
And people are always so busy. It's like, right, I can see you, like, let me see my schedule. Maybe in 6 months. How about that? And I'm like, or when I lived in Paris, it was very much so. I had a lot of friends who, like, then meet new people to Paris. And, like, how long are you staying for? Only 6 months. I don't want to be a friend with you.
Really?
Because they didn't want to invest the energy of getting to know someone if they were leaving in 6 months.
Wow. Gosh, that's extraordinary.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not easy in a new city, but it's more rewarding. Mm. It's life enriching.
Mm.
It and I always say, if you don't like it, you can go back home.
True, true.
There's nothing stopping.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Today's episode is supported by Airbnb, and what a great partnership. If you're a longtime listener of the Travel Diaries, you probably know that we love to put our home on Airbnb when we're traveling. Like last autumn when we took the family to Puglia, we put our house on Airbnb when otherwise it would just be sitting empty, which meant that we earned some extra money that went towards our flights and maybe some souvenirs too. Hosting on Airbnb for us is also a family affair. My mum is an Airbnb superhost. She regularly has guests stay in her little chalet in her garden. And my dad, who lives in France, has his home on Airbnb so that when he comes back to visit, he is earning some extra money while he's away. My dad is 80 and he only started hosting on Airbnb a couple of years ago. So hopefully that shows you how straightforward the whole experience is. He found it so easy to list his house that I think he's got all his pals signing up now too. And it really is straightforward. You can choose whether you want to rent out your entire home or just some rooms. Alex and I, for example, list our spare bedroom and that works really well for us. So if you have a trip coming up and you want to earn some extra money while you're away, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.co.uk/host. That's airbnb.co.uk/host. Thank you to Airbnb. We've all read endless articles that say, oh, you know, the Swedes, they've got it right. Mm. They've got that balance right. Have they? Have they got it right, do you think?
Look, I must say, I have lived in London for... I lived in London for a very long time. I lived in Paris for a very long time. And in the last 3 years of living in Sweden, I have taken holidays, which I never used to. Mm-hmm. I used to be a workaholic, like 24/7. And like the whole of July, everybody's off.
Yeah.
So it's no point working because it's all like you just get out of office. Yeah. And then people have a much better work-life balance there. The approach to family life in terms of shared, you know, parental leave, the childcare situation, it is really much better. I mean, I don't think I could have the career I have now without the support I get from the Swedish government in terms of subsidized childcare and parental leave and all of that.
Mm.
I must say, I do pay high taxes. You know, it's not cheap, but I get my money's worth in terms of the services they supply.
Yeah. And what's been some of the highlights of living there so far?
You know, the long summer days. And you go swimming in the lakes, you know, wild swimming, as it's been branded now, or it's just swimming in a lake. It's really refreshing. And that kind of wilderness to it, you know, the forest, the nature. You have to love nature if you're into, you know, you go to Sweden. The cities aren't like London or Paris. They're a lot smaller. But that's the great thing about Stockholm. You are only ever 100 meters away from some nature, whether it's water or a forest or a park. There's always nature around you.
That's how you started off one of the episodes that I just had the pleasure of watching, where you say you're just like 10 minutes from Stockholm and you're in this extraordinarily beautiful forest.
Yes, yeah.
That is just so special.
I think also for your mental well-being.
Yeah.
It is really important to be able to switch off.
Mm.
And the Japanese have this thing called forest bathing. Whereas the Swedish say, just go for a walk in the forest.
Yeah, but you do feel a tangible difference doing it, don't you? Being out in nature, it's so good for your mental well-being, as you say.
Mm.
Chapter 4 is your all-time favourite destination. What would that be?
I don't know, like if I remove like my cultural heritage, like Malaysia and Austria out of it, because if I include that, then it's impossible. But I must say, I love Tokyo.
Yeah.
I've been very fortunate to have been to Tokyo twice now, because for some reason, my cookbooks are translated into Japanese and my TV shows, and they really like me there. So last year I went... and hopefully I'll be going again this year.
Really?
Yeah, so I'm becoming kind of a Swedish ambassador. So my Swedish show will be airing and my cookbook will be coming out in Japanese. I even met the lady who does my voice for my TV shows over there.
Oh, so that's so surreal.
Yeah.
So what do you love about Tokyo?
The thing is, I don't speak Japanese. And so when I go there, I'm like, I've no clue what I'm doing. It's like traveling before the internet age a little bit, because you're still very lost. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to kind of go with your gut. So that is something really refreshing. Also, when I go into a shop, it's like I look at something, I pick it up. It's a packet of something. I'm like, do I eat it? Do I wash with it? Do I put it in my clothes? What do I do with it? I don't know.
Yeah. Lost in translation.
Exactly. Totally lost in translation. And if you like, I'm one to really like to research and kind of make a list of, oh, I've got to do this, this and this. And it is like, okay, I'm going to slow down and just go with the flow. And also, I mean, Japanese culture, you know, their craftsmanship, their attention to detail, it's something I don't have in that sense. I don't have that, you know, dedication to just one thing. I like to do a project and then move it on to another. But I, you know, I went to a ramen school on my first trip in Osaka, and I remember talking to this guy, and he spent his whole life just dedicated to ramen, learning, you know, the broth had to have this density in terms of fat to water ratio to like bone, blah, 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 da, da, da. It was like, it was a science.
Yeah. To absolute perfection.
Yeah.
Do you have any favorite hangouts?
Actually, there was one thing I had on my last trip. So it's always food related with me. And it were it was these grapes, and they're only these, this grape from, I don't know where in Japan. And they were wrapped in a rice, sweet rice kind of dough.
Ooh.
And so you'd bite into this chewy, tender rice dough, and then you'd get the crunchy, crisp, fresh grape in the middle.
Oh, that sounds so delicious.
They were divine.
And also like nothing I've ever tasted before.
Exactly. It was an eye-opening experience. I'd never had anything like that before.
Well, that's an amazing all-time favorite destination. Do you have another favorite city, or would Tokyo be your favorite destination for all?
Favorite city. I love Sydney. I have a soft spot for Sydney. So last year I was filming there, another TV show, but getting up in the morning, I'd get up super early before I started filming, head to the beach. I'd go for a bar class. So do an hour workout. Then I'd do a couple minutes, like 10 minutes meditation on the beach, get a green juice. And I was like, oh, this is the life. Yeah, I feel super healthy and fit and like really energized.
Sun's shining.
The sun is shining. I was like, I mean, it does help. The great weather and the food scene is like really diverse and vibrant as well. The only thing is when you fly to Sydney, you get like to, I don't know, depends where you're changing. It's doing a stopover. You get to Singapore or like Abu Dhabi or, you know, and you're like, I've still got another 14 hours or I'm not even there yet.
Yeah.
It takes a long time to get there.
So do you think, little Australian kitchen might be on the horizon?
I'm not so sure. It's just too far away at the moment.
Yeah. Are there any other places that you have on your hit list of where you'd like to live?
Right now, I really love living in Sweden, minus the winter, but I can get through winter. It's okay. I love the culture. I love the fact that they're so embracing a family life, which is right for me now.
Yeah.
Who's to say that in 10, 15, 20 years' time, where I'll be living. But for now, it's the right place to be.
And is the hygge kind of trend, do you feel it tangibly there?
So hygge, the Danish...
Hygge, yeah,
I'm not
sorry.
Actually, I'm no Dane, so don't take me... So Sweden is more about the lagom.
Oh, tell me about that.
So lagom, there's no direct translation for lagom, but it's the idea that something's just right. So you know Goldilocks and that porridge she tastes, the little bear's porridge is just right. So the Swedes strive for things to be lagom.
Oh, I like that.
To be something, so it's neither too, you know, showy or out there, and it's neither too humble. It's just right. So you might go on holiday. It wasn't too hot. It wasn't too cold. We did enough activities, but we had time to chill out.
That feels like they're taking the pressure away from life a little bit.
Yeah.
You're not setting the expectations too high.
No.
But not too low.
No, exactly. You just right.
Have you put that into your own life at all?
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm a lot more laid back about things.
Yeah.
You know, I used to be always like, oh, I've got to work, got to do this. And now I'm like, you know what? That person, they can wait a day until I reply to an email. Or that will wait. It's not going to change anything if I reply now, literally this second, or if I reply tomorrow. It's okay.
Yeah, yeah. Great. And how about your all-time favorite place to eat? That's a tough one.
Okay, if my Austrian grandma were still alive, I'd want to be sitting on her kitchen table and having, like, she used to make Grießnockelsuppe.
Right. which translates as?
The Grießnockel are, so it's my awful Austrian accent. They have a very strong dialect from where my mum comes from.
Oh, really?
Yeah. If you're watching TV in Austria, they subtitle it because the rest of Austria can't understand them. So, I mean, it would be comparison Welsh.
Oh, wow.
Or really strong Irish accent, right, or like, right, or Scottish accent, where it's really strong. You're like struggling to understand it. And my grandma used to make this chicken, so homemade chicken stock with these dumplings, which are made with semolina dumplings, and just sliced carrots and some chopped chives. Very simple. And then she made her own strudel. She had a special strudel board where she stretched the dough. So it was paper thin. You have to be able to see the newspaper print through it. So that way you get it crisp. And she would chop up the apple. I remember she wouldn't chop the apple on a chopping board. She'd have it in her hand and chop it like into a bowl. So I have a lot of fond memories of that. And my Austrian grandma, she never saw me change careers into cooking. So it would be, I think that would be the table I'd want to eat.
Oh, yeah. That's lovely. Chapter 5 then is your hidden gem, a place that is maybe a bit under the radar that you love.
Okay, so I will tell you one of my favourite bakeries in Stockholm.
Go for it, please.
So this bakery, so everybody knows the cinnamon and cardamom bun. You know, you have, it's very Swedish. They have this thing called fika. So fika, when I moved to Stockholm, it wasn't like, do you want to go for coffee? It was like, do you want to go for fika? So fika is like having coffee with a bun or coffee with a cake. And I'm like, cake involved? Yes.
I think we should just always say fika from now on.
It's like include a cake or something, a sweet treat.
Yeah.
Anyway, this bakery, they do cinnamon or cardamom buns where there's so much butter and sugar in it that it caramelizes at the bottom and creates this kind of crispy caramel crust, salty caramel crust at the bottom, you know, where butter and salt and sugar and spices merge.
Wow.
It's just a pool of deliciousness. And not many good bakeries will have that same kind of caramel on it. It's very rare. So that's why I really like this place. Mm-hmm. Plus, they make some lovely, hearty kind of rye and sourdough breads. Anyway, so it's called Lille Bror's Bakeri, which means little brother's bakery. So that is like my top spot for a bun or some bread. Or if you're lucky and you go around February time, then they have semlor. And semlor are they're kind of like a brioche type bun, spiked with cardamom, filled with an almond paste and topped with a cloud of whipped cream.
God, I don't think I could go there too often if I wanted to still fit into my trousers, but it sounds like the absolute dream.
Yes.
In contrast then, chapter 6 is the place you'd never go back to.
I went to Tallinn once,
mm-hmm,
and my connecting flight in Helsinki was delayed. And so I got stuck at this awful airport hotel in Helsinki. So I don't have any nice memories of Helsinki. I'm sure Helsinki is really lovely, but I never want to go back to that airport hotel again.
Yeah, travel nightmares can really taint your view of somewhere, can't they?
Definitely.
What's your idea of travel hell?
Well, I recently had to rent a car, and it took 2 hours at the car rental place to get the car.
Oh my goodness, I cannot agree with you more. Car rentals are an absolute nightmare.
I booked it in advance.
They're so
understand.
Prehistoric because they type it all in manually, even though you've booked it in advance.
You knew it was coming. Why isn't the car ready? You're like, I did. Plus, I had 2 kids under 3 with me, and they were so patient, but I was like, this is just a ticking bomb. I'm just waiting for them to like kick off. Like, Mum, when are we getting the cup? When are we get it going? You know, so yeah.
Yeah.
Not my
That's ideas, not okay.
Yeah.
So chapter 7 then is your next big adventure.
So my next big adventure, I've got a few ones happening.
Great.
So obviously excited to go to Tokyo. Mm. And then I'm also going to Vienna to promote the cookbook over there because the Swedish cookbooks come out in German too. And I get a German voice as well on the TV show.
That is so cool.
And I always love my relatives in Austria. They watch the German version of my show. And obviously I speak German, but I don't dub. I don't do my voice because it's a real skill to be able to dub somebody.
Yeah.
And they say, yeah, it's pretty good, this actress who does your voice. She's got a good laugh and she does the right kind of Rachel kind of accent. So, yeah, it's really funny.
Wow. We're on to chapter 8. And that is, what is at the top of your wish list? What's your kind of bucket list destination?
You know what? At the moment, if it's just me on my own, because traveling with kids, at the moment, I don't want to travel with kids. It's just not that fun. I did that this summer and I'm like, afterwards in hindsight, I'm like, you know what? Maybe I'll wait till a bit older.
Wait a few years.
Yeah, exactly. So I would love to go to Brazil. I've never been to Brazil. There's so little I know about that country and the culture. I don't speak Portuguese. Or I wouldn't mind going back to Cornwall to surf. So I started surfing about 5 years ago, but I haven't had a chance to pick it up again. I'm really bad, but it's not easy, but there's something about being in the moment when you surf that you just don't get elsewhere. And it's that, like, when you've caught that wave, no matter how big it is, you're like, I've made it, I've done it, I'm riding a wave. It might be only for 3 seconds, but I'm riding a wave. And that spirit and that sense is it's just such a great feeling.
Oh, Rachel, thank you so much. Those were your travel diaries. What a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
You're so welcome. That was Rachel Koo, and what a life she has led so far. As ever, if you've enjoyed this episode, your support with a review or a rating is so appreciated and helps others to discover the podcast. And come and find me on Instagram. I'm at Holly Rubenstein. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll catch you next time. Today's episode is supported by Airbnb, and what a great partnership. If you're a longtime listener of the Travel Diaries, you probably know that we love to put our home on Airbnb when we're traveling. Like last autumn when we took the family to Puglia, we put our house on Airbnb when otherwise it would just be sitting empty, which meant that we earned some extra money that went towards our flights and maybe some souvenirs too. Hosting on Airbnb for us is also a family affair. My mum is an Airbnb superhost. She regularly has guests stay in her little chalet in her garden. And my dad, who lives in France, has his home on Airbnb so that when he comes back to visit, he is earning some extra money while he's away. My dad is 80 and he only started hosting on Airbnb a couple of years ago. So hopefully that shows you how straightforward the whole experience is. He found it so easy to list his house that I think he's got all his pals signing up now too. And it really is straightforward. You can choose whether you want to rent out your entire home or just some rooms. Alex and I, for example, list our spare bedroom, and that works really well for us. So if you have a trip coming up and you want to earn some extra money while you're away, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.co.uk/host. That's airbnb.co.uk/host. Thank you to Airbnb.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.